1208, this is WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams. You can hear me weekdays 9 to noon, and then Pete does all the heavy lifting between noon and 1, and I get to ask some interesting questions, I hope, to some pretty smart people, and today we could use them. Look at that. How is it that the smart people were this wrong? Everybody thought that the unemployment rate was going to go way up, that we would see Depression-era levels or something approaching that. Literally, they said it might start with a 2. Now it's closer to single digits, went from 14-something to 13-something. More jobs being pumped into the hospitality sector and the entertainment side, and the stock markets are reacting most favorably. All of the indices way, way up. The Dow, 1,000-plus. And so you're actually getting back to some of the numbers you were before the thing started to fall, which begs the question, so are we done? Is it going to get better now? Mark, let's start there. Welcome to WGN Radio. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. Good to be with you. I was thinking if you want to talk to someone smart, I'll get my wife or son on the line.
Well, if I had asked you on Wednesday if this is what was going to happen on Friday, what would you have said?
Well, absolutely not. But I do want to note that, you know, we've been in a highly dynamic situation, obviously, since this began. And so just as quick as employers were to reduce their payrolls and put people either out of work or on furlough, some have obviously opted to try to resolve that situation as soon as they could. And I'm right there with everybody who's celebrating this, because to the extent that it's better than expected, we want the U.S. economy to be in a better place sooner rather than later, and it may well be that we've now seen the worst of the trough in employment and the peak of unemployment. But the numbers that we're still dealing with are still historic, okay? And so among the numbers that are sort of beneath the headlines in the unemployment data are 21 million still unemployed. Half of that number, again, working part-time that would like to have full-time work, so underemployed. That's 10.5 million by that one definition. And 4.4 million who aren't working but would like to work. It's probably some of those who expect to be called back from furlough. And then also beneath the headlines, we're reminded that neither downturns nor recoveries lift everyone or essentially push everyone down at the same rate. And so women are bearing the brunt of the situation relative to men, where the unemployment rate for females, adults, is 13.9%. For blacks, it's close to 17% versus 12.5% for whites and 17.6% for Hispanics. And then for teenagers, those who want to work, so they'd be counted as being in the labor force, 1 out of 3 is unemployed. So this is not a time to spike the football, but a touchdown was just scored, and we'll take it.
So what is it for white males? Do you know what that is? Did you see that
demographic? Yeah, so that number is 12.5%. So essentially there's a 4 percentage point difference between whites and blacks.
Mark Hamrick's on a phone line, Washington Bureau Chief, Senior Economic Analyst for Bankrate.com. Another number that I understand gets lost sometimes, and I wonder if you could comment on this, Mark, is the people who simply are not even looking. They're not even being counted.
Well, I don't have that number in front of me, but it's a significant number. And so, you know, those are the numbers that tend to get us between the U3 unemployment rate and the U6 unemployment rate. And certainly that number that I mentioned in terms of the 4.5 million who want to work but aren't looking, that sort of is part of that equation, as is the 10.5 million who are working part-time and like have full-time work. So those are the underemployment measures. And we've also did have a welcome rebound in the labor force, which is part of the question or the answer to the question you're asking, because in the previous 2 months, labor force participation had declined significantly, and that was a function of those who didn't think it was appropriate for them to look for work, meaning they probably either gave up looking and perhaps they thought they would be part of the long-term unemployed, or they thought they would be called back. So we did get a rebound in labor force participation here, so that's good news. We hope that continues, because that's sort of the success leading to further success, and we were seeing some of that and in fact, a great deal of that during the expansion that appears to have ended earlier this year. And that was a point that Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell would make time and time again as one who attends his news conferences mm-hmm. when we're able to be in person for those things. So that was one of the good news stories, and we hope that we can repair that damage. But we just completed a quarterly economic survey at Bankrate, obviously done before this report, and the consensus among those economists was that the unemployment rate will remain at 10% by next May, and we'll see what happens.
10% for another year. I mean, we were at, 3.5%, 4.5% in that neighborhood?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's... Okay, well, then we need to talk about that, and we'll continue in just a minute. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Mark Hamrick's on the line, Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. I did want to ask you about rates, but let's just finish that point that you were making a moment ago, Mark. You said that while the unemployment has happily gone down a point rather than up five, you think that maybe for the next 10 months, the rate's going to stay around 10%, huh?
Well, the consensus coming into this report was that we'll still have elevated unemployment for some time because there's been real damage caused that will not be repaired or restored. And obviously, the Federal Reserve gets a great deal of credit for what it has done. Congress and the president put aside their political differences at least through four rounds of legislation and now are discussing broadly what they want to do next. The president talked about that a little bit today. He's pushing for a payroll tax cut, which, by the way, doesn't help people that aren't on the payroll. You know, obviously, Democrats are pushing for aid, among other things, for states and localities, many of which have busted their budgets through all this. And the events of the past week probably have further exacerbated that to the extent that their police departments have been on high alert and deployed all over the place. So I think that we need to be reminded it's an election year, and so I do think they'll continue to press the fiscal stimulus button because most of the incumbents who are in Washington want to remain there.
Senator Durbin told us that there was no question that the amount of money the federal government is spending via stimulus checks, et cetera, was a good idea, absolutely necessary. We may need to do another. We may need to do another round. But do you agree with the first part that this was? So forget about the how many trillions? 15 now, trillions of dollars of debt we're loading onto our grandkids. Yeah. It's absolutely necessary. Are you in agreement with that, Mark?
Well, that's a political question at the end of the day, and I'm fortunate not to have to work in politics. But let's put it this way. Obviously, the unrest that we've seen over the past week was set off by events related to the murder of individuals at the hands of law enforcement. We know that. But beneath that has been long simmering economic inequality and heightened unemployment, as we just established, still among blacks, for example, and Hispanics. So it didn't necessarily ignite that, but it added fuel to the fire. And this is what we see not only with people all across the country who have been in communities and individuals who have not participated in the economic expansion. Many of those sent Donald Trump to the White House, and it will remain to be seen whether they remain loyal supporters of him in the fall or not. But that's the story from globalization and technology, that we have not had an economy that has lifted all individuals. And so racial unrest and unrest broadly is one consequence of that. And elected officials, having been elected, are supposed to be responsive to the problems in their communities. And so if we were prepared for the possibility of depression-like unemployment, then it's absolutely appropriate that the government ought to be spending money and taking measures to address that, because at some point, the government itself is not sustainable if the people are not being addressed. And that's the way the government's supposed to work.
I suppose, do you have an opinion about the states that opened up early? Maybe that was appropriate. There's great disagreement among states, mayors, the president, who opens when, how, where. But I wonder if that's one of the things that fueled these positive numbers today.
No doubt. In fact, Labor Department said that right off the bat. And Labor Department, at least in terms of the people that do this work, are not political. They're civilian employees. And they said the limited lifting of restrictions across the country played into the improvement. We did a survey, or at least released one, about 2 weeks ago that got to the issue of how willing are consumers to go back out and essentially do what they were doing before. And 40% said they would be shopping less often. That happened to mirror the number who have suffered a decline in the ability to spend, whether because of job loss, furlough, reduced hours, or reduction in pay. And also, only about one-third said that they'd be as willing to shop in public once those restrictions are lifted within a month. Okay, only a third said they'd do it within a month. So I think we're still going to be hamstrung to some degree by not only the confidence that consumers may be lacking with respect to their ability to deal with the medical threat, but the medical threat itself is imposing restrictions via local and state authorities and federal authorities giving that guidance, with obviously restaurants and bars not able to operate at the capacity they did before. I have baseball tickets for tomorrow. I don't think I'm going to be able to go to a game because it's not going to exist. So all these things, those things are not happening, and that's going to restrain the economy.
Yet, look what's happened. You know, Dr. Kevin Most was on this radio station earlier today, though, and he said that if as a result of us opening too aggressively or too early, or for that matter, the protesting, that's what he was talking about, the rallies where people, of course, aren't socially distancing, even if they're wearing masks, he said we might see another dip. That's not just a medical issue now, right? Maybe the economy will dip accordingly. Is that a concern of yours, Mark Hamrick?
Sure. Well, it was a fear before all this because, you know, the epidemiologists tell us that there's a risk that the virus becomes more threatening in the fall again, associated with the arrival of cold weather, not unlike the flu. And we've said all along, I thought all along, that ultimately the only solution for this is the deployment the fact that we can all get access to vaccines, and, you know, the polls indicate about 3/4 of Americans are willing to get them. And we need still successful treatment of the illnesses associated around COVID-19. So whether it is exacerbated by the events of the past week or the willingness of individuals to, you know, go to the Lake of the Ozarks or wherever the location may be, I think we're obviously still going to deal with some risks of outbreaks. That's just a fact of the situation, and the economy is going to be watched closely for any impacts that can wreak on it.
One last question about interest rates, credit cards, savings and loans, CDs. Do you see the news today? The markets are up significantly. The Dow a moment ago was up 1,000 points on the heels of this unemployment number. Is there going to be much movement in those areas?
Unlikely. We did see the benchmark 10-year Treasury yield move up a little bit. That does tend to be proxy, for lack of a better one, for what happens with mortgage interest rates, and they've recently moved to record lows. Manufacturing and the housing market have looked like they're doing better than what would have been thought, maybe more at the leading edge of some of the more less moribund economic activity. So I think that the outlook for interest rates for the foreseeable future is going to be lower for longer. We do have a news conference by Chairman Powell next week. It'll be a virtual news conference again. And I'm sure that he's going to continue to adhere to the talking point that's been established over the last several months. And that is, the Fed is on the case. It'll do whatever it needs to get the economy where they want it to be, which is maximum employment and stable, low inflation. They're a long way from any of that. low interest rates are going to be in place for a while.
Yeah, well, there's just and that encourages people to put the money in equities, and that's good for maybe the markets and ultimately the jobs. But I think a lot of people would like a safer harbor, you know. And frankly, cash is, I guess, sufficient for some folks. As long as I don't lose, I'll take that.
Well, we've advocated forever at Bankrate that individuals who are capable of doing it need to save more and have liquid savings, meaning get access to it as rapidly as possible. And coming into this, long-established Bankrate data has indicated that only 40% of Americans could pay an emergency expense of $1,000 or more from savings. The rest were living paycheck to paycheck, effectively. So what happened to those who didn't have paychecks? So the need for emergency savings and retirement savings hasn't gone away. If anything, it's been further affirmed here lately, and I would continue to say, even though you may not like the low rates that you get with savings, it pays to shop around. That's one of the reasons why we do exist. There are tremendous differences in the rates of return you can get on savings of all kinds, and you know, it's always amazing. Many people only take the mortgage that their realtor sort of points them toward in terms of if you're going to buy a home, and they say, oh, we'll work with this person, and they don't look around. Same with car loans, and essentially they're leaving money on the table, or even worse, taking money out of their own pocket and giving it to someone where they didn't need to do that.
Maybe, though, I wonder if we just have a minute left. Maybe this is a conversation for another day, but some fundamental change needs to happen to better encourage people to save money. We've heard about that number. We never had to face it. Now we have this economic crisis, and suddenly people don't have money for food. And I'm just wondering if maybe we have another way to encourage people to save money that we haven't incentivized them with now.
It's a great question. It is a 20-minute conversation, but it is something that both businesses and governments could easily incentivize.
You think maybe deductibility of some more savings programs?
Sure, or just have them in the workplace. And I, you know, obviously people who are unemployed are probably not going to be able to save much anyway. So I think this is a conversation that is going to be had in the coming years, because clearly as a society we're not saving money either for the short term or sufficiently for the long term, and that means retirement.
Nice to talk to you today, Mark. Thanks for your visit.
Thank you, John. Have a great weekend.
That's Mark Hamrick. He's the Washington Bureau Chief. He's a senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. 1234, this is WGN Radio. We'll keep following the markets. Steve Bertrand's in the newsroom watching that and more news still. And Bob Dunklaw's on a phone line, Chief Operating Officer, the COO of OMI Industries. OMIIndustries.com is their website. Hey, Bob, you're on WGN Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, John. It's always a pleasure to be on and be part of WGN.
Now, you guys have been. I mean, if I don't know OMI, how do I know you guys?
Well, you definitely know us through Freshwave, our consumer brand of odor eliminating products that has been had a long affiliation with WGN, starting with Lou many years ago. You've been a great fan of ours, which we appreciate, and so anyway, it's a pleasure to be with you today.
I found one of your products under the car seat at my house the other day. My wife once put one under there, and then I've got it in the closet and so on and so forth. So OMI, are you guys headquartered in Chicago then?
We are. Our corporate office is based in Palatine, and we have a manufacturing facility. We're a privately held company, and our manufacturing facility is in a small town in southern Indiana, Rising Sun, Indiana, and we've got a great team of people down there where we run our consumer business, which is Freshwave. We have an industrial business and a commercial business that provides odor abatement solutions to our end user customers. We work all over the world, and our company's been around 30 years.
Freshwave are odor eating devices. Is that what you would call them?
Yeah, that pretty much differentiates us. We have a really amazing plant-based chemistry that captures odor, captures it, eliminates it, and it's gone. Doesn't mask it with masking fragrances or anything else like that. So if you have a cat litter box, you put our crystal gel into the closet with your litter box, you'll never know that litter box was in that with your nose. You'd never know the litter box was in the closet.
So how's business been now?
Well, you know, it's been a challenge, but, you know, we're really proud of how our team is battling. It's been, you know, nothing could have prepared us for this or anybody for what we've experienced with the COVID crisis and how sudden it was. But, you know, I'm happy to report that, it slowed us down originally, but once we got our bearings, you know, we've been able to sustain our business well.
How many people do you all employ?
Well, we don't, as a privately held company, John, we're kind of private with the numbers of our company, but I'll say we're less than 500 employees, but we've got a good team in Palatine and a whole another great group of people in our plant in Rising Sun.
I got that. Well, if you can't answer these questions, don't, but I'm just wondering, then how many people did you have to lay off? Did you participate in PPP, that sort of thing?
We did, and we have not laid off anybody. And, and it's a very, you know, it's a fluid situation, but our business is on solid ground. And so we were fortunate to get a PPE loan. But as we're, you know, that of course is rolling out right now, and meaning it's ending that period that the PPE loan helped us. And you know, and right now, based on the condition of our business and the circumstances as we see right now, you know, we're going to be you know, maintaining our workforce.
I'm glad to hear that. I wonder, you know, at first I thought, well, if everybody is now not working, say, in offices, plants, schools, et cetera, but that doesn't mean they still don't go home. So maybe the industrial side is off, but the domestic use would go up. Did you see any sort of trade that way?
You know, our industrial business has been solid. Commercial business, which is one half of it, is very heavily invested in the hospitality channel. So that's been a challenge for us. But we also serve the healthcare marketplace, and so and then our consumer marketplace. You know, what we did was about 3 years ago we started heavily investing in our e-commerce capable platforms, and so, you know, some of our brick and mortar retailers closed and you know, are just starting to reopen for business right now. But so we really prioritize our e-commerce platforms. Thankfully, we had the foundation set, and we've had really, really tremendous success. We've also been able to utilize PR to boost our revenue. So we really were fortunate in securing media segments on Good Morning America, The View, Live with Kelly and Ryan, that not only provided revenue, direct revenue, consumers the opportunity them to purchase Freshway products, but it also, you know, exposed our consumer brand to millions of consumers nationwide and helped us all around. I mean, our all of our social media grew from that. It was, you know, it was very. It was great. So, you know, those are the type of opportunistic things. Oh, we also, I should say, in addition to odor eliminating now, we've also, you know, started manufacturing some hand sanitizer, which we're selling online and through our brick-and-mortar retailers, and we're donating thousands of units of sanitizing products to first responders and healthcare professionals.
How do I get my hands on that stuff? any of your products, for that matter. I mean, is it omi-industries.com?
Freshwaveworks.com. Yeah, Freshwave also has a robust Amazon presence, but also, you know, one group of brick and mortar retailers that have been open throughout this and are really being heroic in serving their local communities is our Ace Hardware retailers. And Freshwave has been a really strong. Our Chicagoland Ace stores and Freshwave have had a long partnership, and so you can get all Freshwave products at any of those stores.
That's good to hear. Freshwaveworks.com. I asked you to come on because I like to know how businesses are managing in this time. You got that national exposure, though, maybe because of the hand sanitizers. Is that what that was all about?
No. That was, you know, when people, in this case, you know, we were quarantined. So, you know, when people, you know, they call it nesting, right?
Yeah.
When we're in our houses. And so, you know, maybe, you know, when you're in your business, you know, your kids are back home, you know, a lot of college kids came back home, you know, so you got stinky teenagers, you got your pets, and everybody's in their house. And so naturally, for a product like ours, you start noticing the mail odor in your house a little bit more. And actually, you know, those type of when that happens, that's good for our business.
By the way, one last thing as I let you go. I know that you were very close to the Greater Chicago Food Depository for a long time.
Yes.
And I know a lot of people are really challenged. You and I should do them a favor and encourage people to be as generous with that organization as we can.
Yeah, exactly, John. And if I could give one last shout out too, our OMI is a big supporter of a Chicago organization, one of the real gems in the city called Horizons for Youth, that works with underserved students from the time they're in young elementary school and takes them all the way through college. And, you know, and really Horizons proves that, you know, with the right combination of competencies and family investment and community support, that every child, regardless of their socioeconomic status, can reach their you know, reach their full potential. And we're very proud to be not just financial supporters of them. Many of our associates and our CEO Phil Coffey, you know, we spend a lot of time working with Horizons families in the organization. We're very proud of them, and the city, you know, our city should be very proud of them, because you know, they show when you can put underserved children on a level playing field, they really, really thrive. And also thanks for the shout out for the Food Depository too, which is, I was proud to serve on their board for 11 years, and amazing organization.
That's a good report from Fresh Wave, isn't it? And a good corporate neighbor. Bob, it's good to talk to you. My best to everybody over there. I'm glad folks are working.
John, it's always great to hear from you, and thank you for having us on today.
That's Bob Dunklaw, Chief Operating Officer at OMI Industries, folks around here that make Fresh Wave products. It's 12:42. It's time for the Wind Trust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wind Trust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Horse racing returned to New York this week, and it might return to Arlington International Racecourse in July. The racing board will consider a plan to run 8 races a day, 3 days a week through September. Horses and jockeys will be there, but no spectators. JCPenney will begin closing 154 of its stores next week. They say it could take 4 months to get it done. Stores at River Oak Shopping Mall and in Bourbonnais are on the list. And it's not bad for everyone. Citadel founder Ken Griffin paid more than $100 million for a painting by Jean-Michel Basquiat, the late African-American artist who focused on race and inequality. Griffin will likely loan the work to a museum. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
$100 million. How about that number, huh? Griffins sure do donate a lot of money to causes in Chicago. The bikeway and the lights along them that I favor when I can get on the other side of Lakeshore Drive has their name on it. Not literally, but thank you for that. Wow. Want to change your bet on 571, Steve? I think that was the number you had.
I can see you're going to hold me to it. No, I'm good with that. We'll see what happens. I mean, I certainly hope it doesn't happen. Right now, the Dow is up 936 points, the NASDAQ up 214, and the S&P 500 up 89.
I asked Steve, where do you think the market's going to finish? He wasn't all that optimistic that it would stay at those very high levels. It's 1244. I took the over at 571. You want to play, Orion? Where do you think the market's going to finish the day?
I would pretty much go along with Steve on this one. I think we're going to see some profit taking before it ends. So I haven't formed a number yet, but I will at 120.
Oh, at 120 this afternoon?
Yeah, right.
Not at 120 points, because if we don't stay at 1,000, I can live with that, but I'd like to keep as much of this as I can. So Steve said, let's set the line at 571 points up on the Dow. O's in that neighborhood, too. What else have you got for us, Orion?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the numbers in the grain market. Chicago Board of Trade, the July wheat contract down 9.25 cents a bushel, but July corn is trading higher, up 2.25 cents. Soybeans, the July contract trading down 0.75 cents. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the numbers there, June lean hog contract down 72 cents a hundredweight. Interestingly enough, the rest of the lean hog contracts are trading higher. The June live cattle contract down $1.47, and the August feeder cattle contract down 45 cents. More soybean sales reported today, all to unknown destinations. Generally turns out to be China, but these were the sales. 4 of them reported by private exporters, 196,000 tons of soybeans. The next sale, 134,000. The next sale, 198,000. And the next sale, 60,000. All of those sales going to unknown destinations. And finally, the cancellations keep coming in, but this is a big one. For the first time in its 53-year history, the World Dairy Expo has been canceled for this year because of the COVID-19 situation. The show was scheduled to be held in Madison, Wisconsin, September 29 through October 3rd. About 62,000 people from 100 countries come to that show, the biggest dairy show in the world. They will hold the 54th event next year on the end of September and the first part of October, but that's a big cancellation impacting a lot of people. And we know the Indiana State Fair has been canceled this year. The Wisconsin State Fair has been canceled this year. And how many more county fairs and state fairs will we see canceled because of the COVID? So that's your money on 720 WGN.
1249 WGN Radio. So the news in 11 minutes. We'll do that at 1 o'clock. Steve Bertrand will have that for you. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman. And Mike Lavatola's on a phone line, Foxtrot CEO and co-founder, FoxtrotCo.com. Mike, it's John. You're on the air. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Chicago-based Foxtrot does what?
Best way to think of us is as a modern corner store. So great craft beer, wine, prepared foods, ice cream, all those fun things. And we have locations throughout the city and also deliver everything in under an hour through our app.
First, I heard about this because one isn't in my immediate neighborhood, but I think you were one of the first guys that sort of started to talk about when COVID-19 hit, hey, we deliver. We will get you the food if you can't get into the store or afraid to go to the store.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we actually ran the business online only before opening up our first store. So, you know, that's really been a part of our DNA, and we've been really, you know, proud to provide that service to you over the past couple months.
I saw that you're a graduate of the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. Do they teach anything at that great business school about how to stay profitable during a pandemic?
They, as you know, they're very data-driven and don't fall for much. So the, you know, kind of rigor of going through that program has been really, really useful over these past couple weeks and months.
How so? Like, what's something that you knew that you have to apply, or maybe something that you're doing differently that you never thought you'd have to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think the shift to online and the shift of our product mix is huge, right? So we always had an online business, but with, you know, COVID happening, customers were demanding new products, new categories. So, you know, think of stocking up on, you know, frozen veggies versus, you know, maybe tons of craft beer. So we, you know, have been really taking a week-by-week approach to our merchandising and adapting it far more frequently than we would in normal times.
See, Bertrand's in the WGN Radio newsroom.
Hey, Mike, I thought of you a week or two ago when I heard that Bob Mariano is getting back into the business and building, like, little boutique shops, dine-in, take-out, and grocery stores, and he's going to start here in Chicago. It sounds like you might be threatened by that, or it might be in your market.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. You know, I think if anything, it just shows that this sort of omni-channel model and, you know, smaller markets really speak to what customers are looking for now. And, you know, who knows better than him?
So you're flattered by that. But it's interesting that maybe he's looking at your success and saying, oh, we need to be more like that. But also that's competition now, isn't it?
It is, yes. You know, and, you know, I think the more the merrier. But what gives us a lot of heart, again, is, you know, starting off as an online-only retailer and running the business that way for the first couple of years really routes us, you know, digitally, and sort of all the data built up over the time, I think, gives us a pretty big leg up in terms of what the, you know, new modern consumer is looking for.
Do I have to sort of sign up, like, I need to be a member of your program, or can I be a guest visitor and just shop once in a while?
So you can certainly just be a guest visitor and pop into our store for a coffee or order a great bottle of wine online. But most of our customers are actually in our Perks program, which means, you know, they're shopping in our stores, both in retail and online, and they get some pretty great free perks. So, like, they get free coffee in our stores, which is this, you know, really great local blend from Metric Grocery. You get free delivery online, happy hour pricing on our beer and wine for our upcoming patios. So there's a lot of benefits of, you know, shopping with us across both channels.
Has the opening up of Chicago helped you guys considerably, or since you were kind of an online business to begin with, you weren't so affected?
Yeah, you know, we were definitely fortunate to have the e-commerce business. So while our retail business, you know, there was lower traffic in the stores, our e-commerce business has just totally exploded. So, you know, both more customer orders from our existing customers and, you know, certainly welcoming in a lot of first-time customers into the fold as well. So we're really excited, you know, for the summer is now reopening our full-service coffee bars and reopening our patios to, you know, be able to bring that part of the business back.
Foxtrot has locations in the West Loop, Lincoln Park, River North, Southport, Hubbard, Old Town, Wicker Park. You were going to do Streeterville. Do you have a Streeterville store?
Absolutely. We are finishing up construction and should be open here in the next few weeks.
Have you noticed a significant spike in the last, I don't know, 48 hours?
In terms of deliveries?
Deliveries or people coming in?
Oh, yeah. So certainly. So our stores definitely have a sense of life that they haven't had for the past couple of weeks. So, you know, we're doing a lot on opening, you know, windows to so that we can serve people on the sidewalks, not have to overcrowd the stores. But it is certainly a great feeling to see, you know, customers in the store and enjoying the service again.
So are you serving alcoholic beverages then out the window that way?
Not out the window, but we do on our patio. So we have a great selection of local craft beers, or you can buy a bottle of wine off the shelf, and we'll give you two glasses to enjoy on our patios.
Mike Lavatola is on the phone line, Foxtrot CEO, co-founder of Foxtrot.com, to find out more. It's FoxtrotCo.com,
FoxtrotCo.com,
right?
Yes.
How many folks do you guys employ, Mike?
We're up to about 250 people now.
Did you have to lay people off when the economy went south?
We were in the pretty fortunate position of having to hire during that time. So, you know, our stores remained relatively stable. And then given the, you know, pretty significant growth in e-commerce, we were fortunate to be able to hire, a bunch of folks during that time.
We're all now staying on. So for folks, so you didn't apply then for any of the government assistance programs?
We did apply for them and are, you know, trying to figure out what the best way to utilize them are.
Yeah. It's interesting, maybe for businesses like yours, everybody else is agonizing over it. And then some businesses were uniquely positioned to take advantage of the new market dynamics. So you guys have been okay for this run, huh?
Yes. It certainly presented a whole host of other, you know, challenges, but relative to what a lot of, you know, great restaurants in the city and other retailers have had to kind of go through over the past couple of months, we definitely consider ourselves pretty fortunate.
Any last words of wisdom for folks that are maybe just hearing about you for the first time?
Come on over. We'd love to show you, our great coffee program in the morning and be able to offer you a nice cold draft beer at night.
It's nice to talk to you, Mike. Congratulations. Good luck, and let's visit again down the road.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.